so this is joint work with lots of people. In fact, it's not even joint. These are Gilboa's transparencies. I didn't have a chance to take his name off. He's sitting there. So we're going to develop a rigorous mathematical framework for non-local signal processing and generalize PDEs to handle textures and things like that. Okay. This is supposed to show you motivation for non-local operators. This is comparing different parts of the image with a particular patch around a given pixel. And you can see that picture has some repetition, even though I don't know if you'd call it texture. Okay. This is one of the least original things I've been involved in. It's putting together lots and lots of stuff. Non-local means and patch distances, and there are some names up there. In particular, Bawadi's, Cole, and Morel, who did non-local means. Bilateral filters, spectral graph theory, diffusion geometry that we had a whole program on, almost. Beltrami flow and UCLA-ish type stuff. Lots of familiar names. Let's get to it. Here's a toy example just to show you what we can do, and then we'll show you what we did, how it works. On the left, there is a noise. Do I have a pointer? Yeah, I do. Oh, great, low-tech pointer. Here's a noisy image. This is what happens if you do TV flow. Not everybody here is so au courant with all this stuff. Let me just review for about 25 seconds what this is based on. Image processing, the way we do it around here, is basically minimizing something. J of U plus lambda times God knows what. It could be, if you're denoising, it could be integral of F minus U squared over 2. And J of U, if anybody has any sense, it should be the integral of grad U. Now that's what it should be, but it's not anymore. Because there are, God help us, better ways for doing denoising. Not for regularizing, but for doing denoising. So that's what we'll talk about. And in fact, we will be doing grad U, but it'll be grad sub W of U, where W is something interesting. Okay, I hope. And to push that a little further, if we do gradient descent on that thing, we solve an equation which looks like UT is equal to the subgradient of minus the subgradient of U plus maybe lambda F minus U. That's a differential equation which you drive to steady state. So we're going to be interested in this flow, for example, and we'll also be interested in something called inverse scale space, which is sort of the backwards version of that, but a very well-posed backwards version of that. In fact, if you want to know what it is, I'll jump ahead. It's d dt of dj of u is equal to what? F minus u. This is a crazy equation. Which we can solve and drive to F. So here you start out with U of 0. If we take this away, we start out with U of 0 equals F. Here we start out with U of 0 equals 0, and this thing approaches F. And this is a good thing to do in many cases.
So it's a third-order partial differential.
It's an insane partial differential equation. For example, if J, God forbid, was the integral of grad U squared over 2, which is unforgivably not done around here, the equation would be d dt, which you believe a minus Laplacian of u is equal to u minus f. This is not the backwards E equation. This is a well-posed problem, very well-posed, but it's an integral equation. And there are reasons for doing this. So I got to cram a lot of stuff in 40 minutes. Let's see how much I can do. So this is TV flow. If you start out with this and you just run this equation without anything special and stop when you're happy, this is what you get. This is what you get if you do our new improved, you'll see what it means, denoising based on non-local operators. This is the original image, and this is the error, and this is the error, so you do better this way. And we'll tell you why. Okay. So this is what happens if you do all this. This is the clean image. This is just, it's impressive to look at a graph rather than an image. This is the noisy image, this is TV, and this is our proposed super-duper improved version, which in fact is linear, would you believe, but But the coefficients of a linear evolution equation depend on F, unsurprisingly. But it's once you manufacture the coefficients, you solve a PDE, which looks like a parabolic equation. Ut is equal to something, which is almost parabolic, but the coefficients depend strongly on F. And that's what makes it work. Okay. So how much of this can we do? There's lots of background. This is a great paper, although I take offense with some of the comparisons. But anyway, it's a great paper by these three guys from Kashan. Non-local means is a way of taking an image U, you apply this non-local operator to it, which in fact depends on the image U. So here, this time around, U is what I would call F, the noisy image. You do this kind of smoothing, and you normalize by this same operator when you put a 1 in here. And this is a great denoising, but it's not the best, but it's very good. It's a way of comparing patches, taking a patch around. This is not a patch, actually, this is global. We'll talk about a patch later. But basically, you compare the image. It's a very nice idea, which goes back to Yaroslavsky. You compare the image at a point or in the neighborhood of a point with its values or its smoothed out values in other parts of the image. And there's lots of repetition in images usually, whereas noise is not repeated. So this is a very nice denoising.
Don't you need to know something about the image? Because that has a scale in it.
Yeah, so you'd like to know the standard deviation.
How do you pick H?
That's the question I'm asking. Don't you have to basically look at the image that you want to fix up, and that should have a characteristic scale in it, and then that determines H?
Yes. The answer is yes. Okay.
So basically, you have to run the algorithm many times and see which H you like.
You can do a pretty good job just by looking at the noise.
Why should there be just one H in the problem?
There isn't. You can play this game and do lots of perturbation things. Okay. So this is not finished, but this is step one. So what we're going to do is change all that a tiny bit and improve things, and probably steal other people's ideas. I mean, it's very hard to figure out the history of the subject, but it's interesting. Instead of doing that, what we will do is find a function W, which was related to that non-local means function, and we'll set up a function J, which we minimize. So W basically is going to depend on the noisy image, and then we're going to fool around with U. Okay, so bad notation. This time around, we're fixing W, we're varying U, and phi is some convex function. For the examples we'll take, there's two possibilities. One leads you to sort of a pseudo Laplacian, one leads you to a sort of a TV minimization. So phi is some convex positive function. The wave function is positive and symmetric. You do Euler-Lagrange for this. It's kind of cute. You get a function of two variables, and you minimize over the product space, as it were. So that was done in a paper with Kinderman and Jones a while ago. We're doing things a little bit differently here, but you'll see. And what you're going to do is, first of all, how do you compute the weights? Here is d of x, y, and you're comparing. So you see the goal is to compare this thing and have it peak when there are things that are similar to it in other parts of the image. So w looks like something which is almost like a generalized distance, but not quite. It's a distance in function space. If phi is 1 half s squared, which is something that works surprisingly well, you get something which is almost a Laplacian. Okay, so if phi is equal to 1 half u of x minus u, one, make it 1 fourth when you finish normalizing, 1 fourth u of x minus u of y squared, when you take the subgradient, you get this thing. Now, if you were crazy enough to let w be delta functions, let's suppose you're in one space dimension and w was like delta of x minus y minus h and plus delta of x minus y plus h, 1/2, 1/2. This will be a standard, when you finish integrating this thing, this will be a standard approximation to Laplacian, is what it would be. So in general, it's not. It's something else.
Stan, you keep the w fixed?
Yes. You could update w. That's getting close to what people have done before. So can other people. But keeping W fixed makes this a linear problem, so it's faster. It's funny kind of linear problem. You're denoising an image with a linear partial differential equation whose coefficient, not PD, but almost PD, whose coefficients depend on F. So you can get edges and everything in there, even though it's linear, because F has those things. Ain't that cute? That's the idea. So if you look at the subgradient of this thing, it's not surprising that it behaves like a parabolic, like an elliptic operator, or UT equals like a parabolic operator. It's positive definite or negative definite depending on the sign. It preserves constants, satisfies the maximum principle. And if W is, a graph which has, under most conditions for W, if W were positive, for example, which doesn't have, if W is a connected graph, a continuous version of a connected graph, then U is constant if and only if this operator is constant, is zero. Okay? This behaves a lot like an elliptic operator, but it's not. I mean, it doesn't have derivatives. So linear scale space looks like this. You saw, as I said before, you can say UT equals Laplacian U. You can have a variable coefficient version of it. This version is the following. It's U of Y minus U of X, W of XY. It's a bounded operator, but who cares? I mean, it can be very close to being singular if you make the support smaller or normalize this in a funny way. You can make it look like a PDE, but you don't have to normalize it particularly. Okay. So this relates very much to non-local means, and we'll get to that in a minute. This is not the way Morell and company did their denoising. To jump ahead a little bit, maybe I shouldn't, but I will. I can't help myself. What we are doing is solving this differential equation with their W, let's say, or a more local version of their W. What they did, which is beautiful, but I mean, which started this whole thing, actually followed up on other people's work as well. They took this L of U. They set it equal to zero. Of course, the answer is U is a constant. That's not very good. And then they began to iterate. What they did. So their equation is integral of U of Y minus U of X, W of XY, dy equals zero. You can factor out U of X here and you get U of X is equal to the integral of U of Y, W of XY divided by the integral of W of XY, all dy. And what they did is iterate. They started out with U zero equals F, and this is U one. And they stopped. And that's what they did. Well, they could repeat it. And in fact, we have a paper with them where we're looking for aneurysms where we repeat it and it works well. But instead of doing that, you can solve this PDE, and there are some advantages. That's what we are doing, which is not what they did. Namely, you can make the support of W smaller, so it's less global. And eventually, it becomes global when you evolve in T. Mm-hmm. Any questions about this?
Yeah, so you're promoting up to some phase space.
Sorry?
You're promoting up to some phase space in which you have this non-local operator?
Promoting up. I heard that expression.
Just in X, that would be a PDE, but up in phase space, you're getting an integral operator where you're going to do some.
Think about this as this is an approximation to a differential equation. W is something which depends on the original image F. And if you wrote this thing out, in coordinates, it would look a lot like a variable coefficient parabolic equation if you use Taylor's theorem on it. How's that? It looks like a second order parabolic PDE, but it looks in a global way and it depends on F. And not that global. This is less global than what those guys did.
So the advantage of running the PDE, I assume, is that you don't have to stop it, you don't have to let it evolve forever, you could stop it.
Well, they don't evolve forever. They evolve it forever, they wind up with U equals zero. That's the only solution of this. They evolve it once or twice, and they stop.
Oh, I see. So this has the advantage that it can be stopped, not necessarily after.
The advantage is we symmetrize this thing; it's more symmetric, and some whatever that means. And B, you can make it more local because the time evolution globalizes it better than this kind of evolution.
When do you stop the process, though?
When you reach the variance of the noise, if you know what it is. What people always do is stop when they're happy.
Yeah, well, that's what I was.
So he's not unhappy.
So you think this is going to adapt to repeated signals before the noise gets you?
Yeah. No, and the evidence is overwhelming that it does. In fact, we are reaching a point, in my opinion, where denoising is almost over. for at least for additive Gaussian noise, the results are getting better and better and better with this kind of stuff. This is not, this is not finished. There's lots of perturbations that you can do, but we have lots of tools now that are pretty amazing, actually. And it's based on a huge bunch of other people's work. I mean, this is related to diffusion geometry. In fact, this probably is diffusion geometry, as well I know. But we're doing it slightly differently, and we hate eigenvalues of Laplacian. We just use heat operators. Yeah, well, I know, but this is easier. But this is easier to implement. So
they only have, just to play devil's advocate for a second, near-repeated structures, but not repeated structures.
So, well, show me an image.
And
like
the near-repeated, well, by construction. So the near, and then the near repetition of it was the same size as the noise. Would this still be able to find correlations between guys that aren't exactly the same? But
God knows. I mean, you could probably screw around with the with that function and try to take that into account if you knew something about it. You know, you have a lot of freedom in how to choose that that W. Well, not a lot of freedom, but some freedom. Okay. So this is not surprising. This behaves like a parabolic equation. Okay. You can do variational denoising on this if you want to. It turns out numerically the best thing to do is not this, but just to solve that blast of heat equation and stop when you're when you reach the variance of the noise. So I'll skip this part. Okay. And here are properties of variational denoising. Again, this is not too surprising, so I'll skip that. Okay. So what are the weights and affinity functions? Well, W is something which is a function of F, the noisy image, in this kind of product space. It's positive, it could be zero in places, so I should say greater than or equal to zero. It's symmetric, it's bounded, and it's maximum on a diagonal when S2 is equal to S1. Typically, this is the kind of thing you could be thinking of, and this could be the variance of the noise. Okay.
What's big F sub F?
The original, instead of being something convolving, something smoothing out F, basically, over a small neighborhood. So here are some test images. What do we have here? Here's the cameraman, here's the noisy cameraman, here's the sailboat, noisy sailboat. This is SNR. Okay. This is the original thing, of course, when you take somebody else's stuff and copy it, you may not get the best possible result. But anyway, we beat it by the scale space. Supposedly, this is better than what Morell and company did. This is the original ROF on the O. This is the best possible TV we have found, which I'll talk about later, inverse scale space version of ROF. And typically, we do about as well as that in our experiments. But this always seems to win.
Is non-locality strictly related to repeated structures?
Basically,
in which case, where's the repeated structure here?
Lots of stuff around
it. Happens to be
around the edges of this guy's boundary and the texture in here and so on. All the boundaries of this guy. In other words, think about it. We have a linear PD and we're getting back edges. This goes against everything I used to believe in. But the coefficients of the PD have discontinuities, so there you go. Okay. So I like it. And here's the noise, and it's all good, actually. And now, this is not the last word. I walk into Arthur's office sometime, and he shows me amazing results doing stuff like this. So denoising is getting better and better.
Can you quantify how much repeatability you need in an image before this technique will work?
Sorry.
It's not just repeated. Sorry, but this thing is not just repeated structures. I mean it's anything where the patches are going to be different. So, for example, an edge usually wouldn't consider a repeated image, but I mean, this loves edges.
Yeah. It loves edges, loves peaks, loves lots of things. Okay. Here are just more calculations. This is the Kashan group did. This is what we get. And the patch size is only 5x5. Window is 11x11. So this is more local than what those guys proposed in their paper. And again, the non-locality comes in some sense as you evolve in time. You pick things up.
So if you iterated over and over again, would you pick up the noise again?
No, that's the whole point. Well, eventually, yes, of course. I mean,
you'd be attracted towards F, right?
No, we're doing just the evolution. So we'd be attracted towards a constant in this case. We start out with what we are doing is the most Mickey Mouse thing. We're solving UT is equal to minus P of U with U of X 0 equals F. Period.
And what's the optimal stopping criteria?
When the norm of F minus U of T, L2, is first time is less than or equal to sigma, the variance of the noise. That's when we're supposed to stop, if we know that. Okay. But there are lots of things. You can localize this stuff. You can do a million different things. There you go. So this is the equation. In fact, that answers your question. When the variance is greater than sigma, you stop. You can do this kind of stuff with segmentation, supervised segmentation, where you basically, this is supposed to model that. There's a cold spot, there's a hot spot, I mean a cold region, a hot region, there's a barrier. You solve the heat equation. Basically what you do is solve the same equation, but initialize by taking places where you know the object is, a few places, initialize that with one. This is where the background, then initialize it by minus one, set it equal to zero otherwise, solve this equation, and then threshold. So whatever is greater than zero is in the object, whatever is less than zero is in the background. This is so-called supervised segmentation. Again, you can do lots of variants on this thing. You have several objects, you can, for example, and this is the kind of results you get. You put some marks in there, which are here and here, here's my box, sorry, there and there. And you run this thing and you get rid of this, you fill in these gaps nicely. You solve the equation and then you threshold. Here is the same kind of thing. Use the marks here and here. This is object, this is background, and that's what we get this way with two marks. Non-local segmentation. If you put more marks in there, you do better, as you can see. So this is a good segmentation without using anything about length of boundary. Just solving this evolution equation. Okay. So now we're going to go a little bit further. Which this last thing was too linear, at least for my taste. So what you can do is develop a non-local gradient and divergence. And having done that, you can think about new non-linear models and applications. And I think that this idea is going to be useful for solving Hamilton-Jacobi equations in very high dimensions with a few data points, which will be useful in control theory. And then we have to figure out ways to compute these minimizations and flows. I don't know if I have time to talk about it, but there's some really fast methods these days using graph cuts done by lots of people having a meeting on it. One of them is Jerome Devarne. He's here, not here today. So we're going to think about non-local derivatives. Think about points in space. I'm going to talk continuously, but this is probably motivated by people who are thinking about discrete points, basically. And you want to figure out some kind of derivative, but actually the next transparency is more important. You want to figure out some kind of gradient. So you have a bunch of data points and you have a function defined at these data points and you'd like to take the gradient of the function. How do you do that? Well, it turns out this is well studied by somebody called Sholkoff and lots of other people probably in machine learning and other areas of science. So we have our good old W, which looks more or less like 1 over d squared, but this sophisticated version of that, depending on f. Mm-hmm. And from that, we're going to get a gradient. And this is the interesting new idea, at least to me, a new idea, which comes from the Sholkoff and colleagues' papers. You have a function of x, which can live in lots of dimensions. You define the gradient to be not a vector-valued function of x, but a function of twice as many variables. How do you like that? And so it has the same dimension it had before, but it depends on twice as many variables. Now, to me, this is a really new notion. Maybe it's old, but it's an interesting notion. So you divide it to be u of y minus u of x times the square root of this w. And now you're living in twice as many dimensions. And from that, you can You need an inner product, you need an adjoint, and so on, to get a divergence. So a divergence is the adjoint of the gradient, the standard inner product. It's just a scalar function, v of xy minus v of xy times the square root of w of xy. Guy found this in this paper by these guys. It's a slight variation of what they did. They normalized, they worried about diagonal values of w. We don't need to worry about that. So once again, you have a gradient, which looks like this. Okay. Then you have a divergence, which is the adjoint with the standard inner product, which looks like this. When you put it together, here's the standard inner product.
Stan, why do you call it a gradient? It's just a kernel.
Because its adjoint is, because when you put it together with its adjoint, you get a Laplace. That's one of the many reasons I call it a gradient. When I take the absolute value of it, I get something like TV. And if I was crazy enough to make W a bunch of delta functions, it would be the standard definition of TV and everything else. So it fits into the right category. And besides, I didn't call it a gradient, they called it a gradient. But it makes a lot of sense. Who is Sholkoff? I mean, apparently he's a big shot, but it's okay. He probably saying who's Osher. Okay. All right. So the standard inner product is like this. You can get a dot product by integrating dy and getting a scalar back. Here's an inner product of vectors and the magnitude of a vector, and you can use all this stuff to minimize TV in this generalized sense. So here's, if you take the gradient and you inner product it with a vector, you get u inner product of divergence. And, this means that if a function vanishes on the boundary, this is zero. And Laplacian, finally, is divergence of gradient. And so the thing we were talking about before makes sense. That's Laplacian. Okay. Laplacian self-adjoint, negative, semi-definite, all these nice things are still true, independent of what w is, as long as it's reasonable. Assumptions we made before, and total variation, which now makes me feel happy because it finally pops up, is the integral of the absolute value of the gradient, which turns out to be this crazy thing. Okay, so now we once again remember W will depend on something which could be the noisy image or whatever it is. Okay, and what you can do is repeat everything we've ever done. At least in the last God knows how many years, you can get total variation, you can get BVL1, you can do total variation flow, and so on. Okay. So you can do motion by curvature, for example, with respect to this crazy distance function.
Why are you calling it isotropic?
Because we're going to do something, we'll put an absolute value in here. And that looks more like the absolute ux plus absolute uy, maybe. So isotropic, that's a good question. I don't know if I'd put it in there, but anyway. Because it depends on W after all, so it's not so isotropic. Yeah, I know. So it's isotropic with respect to W. Okay. But we did some earlier paper with some other people, we put the absolute value in there, and that was supposed to look like UX plus UY. Okay.
So what was the problem TV couldn't solve that this is going to solve better?
Everything.
And why?
Because this takes into account, first of all, you can do things on a graph you couldn't do before, right? I mean, this can be just discrete points. So that's one nice thing.
I meant on the same data.
On the same data, this is going to do a better job of denoising and also regularizing and everything else, I believe. Yeah, basically that's it. Because we're taking into account, because this W has this knowledge of the noisy image or the data that you're given. This is supposed to answer the isotropic versus anisotropic. I wouldn't make a big deal about this. This is supposed to be analogous to this. I'm not sure it is, but this is certainly analogous to this. In fact, this is this if we put delta functions in there and get exactly this. Okay. This one was programmed already in a fast way by Darbon. We did some BBL1 version of this. But everything that was done before that I made a whole to-do about, like Meyer's G-norm, for example, you can do exactly the same thing. You can do the dual of BV is essentially characterized by these things. All this jazz goes through almost word for word. with respect to these new metrics. So you can compute anisotropic TV. We did that with Darbon, which means he did it, but basically we talked about the algorithm with him. And there's going to be an interesting meeting next year on graph cuts. And just to give you a little commercial, according to Jerome, you can solve the original TV minimization if you replace TV by anisotropic US plus UI, for example, or things like it. You can do TV minimization of the type I erased as quickly as it takes to do one FFT of the image, supposedly, which is pretty amazing. So there's no need to ever think about wavelets again. So all the other stuff we were talking about still works. We weren't talking about, other people were talking about, many people were talking about. You can do a Chambolle's projection algorithm for solving ROF by using duality. This is a typo. It's not a big typo, it's just one over or something. Okay. What else? This is the isotropic L1, which I'm not going to make a big deal about. Let's see, I want to do some other stuff. But here's some nice stuff. Impainting, for example. The term impainting was coined by one of our friends over here, at least in the image processing community. Well, people have done sophisticated versions of impainting. An unsophisticated version was done and worked not too badly by Tony Chan and Jackie Shen, where they just minimized BV. The original BV with lambda was something out here, something in the region where you knew the image was correct in some places, and you interpolated inward by letting lambda be zero over here and basically solve the BV minimization. That would be a disaster on this image, because the original TV wouldn't take into account, doesn't like texture. But this works like a charm on this, because we're using the weights of the TV, basically this. So this is sort of a cheat. The results are absolutely amazing. I mean, there's no mistakes at all. But this is like Efros and Leung, very much. But this is a systematic way of doing it, though. It's a nice systematic way of doing it. And also, we maintain it works even if you have cartoon plus texture. You don't have to do anything special. We have a paper where we decompose it and then do them separately. Here it's going to work automatically just by doing something like this because of good old F. And this is supposed to explain why TV is better than not TV.
Is that? Yeah. What was the software you used to solve that? Forget that result.
Ask the man back there. We didn't do anything special. What software? He just found his... Nothing. I mean, nothing special. Just... did gradient descent on this with that W that you got from the neighbors. That's it. Okay. So I'm not saying it's the fastest thing in the world, but.
But what does that mean?
What?
You got an X and a Y.
Where? What?
Top J J T V U plus.
Oh, lambda. That's the just X and Y means we're in two dimensions, and it means that lambda is zero in this region where we don't know where we're in painting, and lambda is something out here. That's all.
That's some functional, should be a real.
It's probably piecewise constant, I would assume. Lambda C outside, lambda zero. There's the answer. Yeah.
It's not the same X and Y that you
have. No, this is band notation. Lambda C outside, it should be lambda sub omega or something like that, where omega is this set. Lambda C outside omega, which is the in-painting set, and lambda is zero in the in-painting.
What's confusing is not a number, it's a function of X and Y.
Yeah, it's piecewise constant. Yeah. When you do the minimization, you minimize with respect to this entire thing.
It
should be inside the integral. Sorry. It should be inside. Okay. All right. Why use TV for impainting? This is supposed to explain it. You can do TVL. You can do BVL1 to remove anomalies. Here is a missing piece and another missing piece and. Look at the results. So again, this is a lot like Efros and Leung, where they look around when they have a texture and they basically correlate with outside. But this is somewhat systematic way of doing it.
What if you have a blurred image?
Then you can use this. We haven't done it, but yeah, I'm sure you can do BVL1, BVL2, whatever this way. If you wanted to use our linear version to do deblurring, it doesn't work well. That is, if you use not BV, but the Laplacian, as it were, grad u squared, as a regularization, not so great for deblurring. But we haven't tried this yet, but I'm sure, maybe we have trouble, but I'm quite sure this is going to work well as a regularization in general for deblurring. Anyway, it should be investigated. There's a lot of stuff to be done yet. Okay. This is most of the intuition as to why TBL1 works. I'll skip it maybe. So here's the conclusion. How am I doing time for? Because I have a whole other talk to give.
Three and a half minutes.
So I haven't got much more to say. Okay, if I'm not going to do anything new. There's a non-local convex framework. There's data-driven family of regularizers can be applied for textures. You can do everything we ever did before for BV this way, and still a lot more to be done. Let me stop and give a plug for something else in the last 2.5 minutes, which is fast methods. Okay. So this is something that has been going on around here and lots of other places. Something which uses discrete applied math, which I used to have nothing but contempt for. Now I'm afraid of it. If you want to minimize, this is the graph cut stuff, and I'll just talk about our contribution to it. Graph cuts to minimize something like TV of U, for example, plus something. My contribution to this is make the something non-local. That's my contribution. And I'll show you the results in a second. So there's lots of smart people working in this area. They'll all be here practically in a year, in 6 months or so. The history of it goes back a long, long way. Only recently people realized that graph cuts could A, be used for solving, sort of isoparametric level set problems. And then using the co-area formula, it was Darbon. Actually, it was somebody else. I think it was Hochberg, who was at Berkeley. But she didn't program it. He rederived it and realized that you could solve problems which use the co-area formula, break them up into a log of the number of quantization levels. So it's incredibly fast. And you can solve things which look like absolute value of ux plus uy plus, for example, lambda integral of f minus u squared or lambda integral of f minus u. Incredibly fast, unbelievably fast, incredibly fast. As fast as I told you as an FFT. This all started with a paper. He found out about the co-area formula and the implication from a nice paper by Chen, Masadugu, and Nicolover. They weren't thinking about fast methods. They just realized you can reduce this to a bunch of level set problems. Okay, so then Darbon realized you can do level set problems by breaking, just doing a log of a number of quantization levels. And it's totally general, it works with this as well, except it has to be local. So my glorious contribution to that was to add things like lambda j compute f minus u squared, for example, to do deconvolution. That's not local. However, by using linearization, you can do very good results incredibly fast. I have a bunch of iterations, but the method is still very fast. I can show you some results in the last 35 seconds. So that's all related. So in the last couple of years, a lot of exciting stuff has happened in PD-based image processing, I must say, making it very, very practical. Let's see if I can find that last thing. Okay. Where is it?
That's a
very fast method. Here we go. My name comes up when I see a reading. Okay, joint work. Okay. So the main idea here is that instead of solving this in one fell swoop, you linearize this blast of thing, do it by iteration, and you can prove it converges very, and it converges very quickly. Okay, it's just a numerical analysis trick. And then I was able to make it into a Bregmanize it, which I will tell you offline what that means, so you don't lose contrast and you get better results. And this is a 256 squared image that he did in 50 seconds. This is the variance of the blur, this is the amount of the noise. It took 50 iterations, it took about a minute to get this thing to deconvolve it with noise. Okay, and here is 84 iterations. It goes up linearly with the number of iterations, obviously, and also with the variance of the blur. Okay. Here is 110 iterations, more noise, more blurry. 132 iterations, 168 iterations, 94 iterations, more blur, and that's it. Okay. Lots of people are working in this area. One of them is Wu Tao back there, Wu Tao Yin. He told me that you did BVL1. Going from second order cone programming to this method, you speed up by a factor of 100. Is that correct? Okay, there he is. Honest man. So this stuff is really fast. That's it.